Wanting to talk about the first two verses of Romans 12, which is something that we have heard many, many times. And yet, I think that tied to some of the stuff that we said this morning and that I was thinking along those lines, that this needs to be reviewed within me and that the timing it might be right along that. So it says there in Romans 12, "Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect." And so as we kind of reviewed this morning the idea of what the sacrifice is and got more in tune with that, then what is my sacrifice as I then go forward in a day-to-day situation? What should that be and how should it go and those things? We know that Romans 12 as a whole is really a description of the Christian in a balanced way, I think is probably the way I would put that. And that it's funny how we know that we must make sacrifices to God, and yet sometimes we become skewed or deny the sacrifice that I need to make. So, what is it that we're supposed to really offer? And understand that I'm taking this from the standpoint of that this is your spiritual service of worship. That if I would worship God, how will I do that? And what would the manner of it be? And I want us to recognize as well, it is not what we do here as a collective group alone. It is what I do daily that makes for worship. And then I bring on Sunday my worship together or with you. I come to worship with you, but it is a continuation of what I do all the time. And so that sense of things, my presentation of self to God, that's really what we do when we worship, is that we're presenting ourselves as who we are and what we are, not putting any makeup on. We're not trying to become a different person, more beautiful because I say things. I'm not more eloquent because of this or that or the other. I am who I am. And we let God's people come before Him, bringing them this living sacrifice and offering that they have that is our spiritual and reasonable service. And so, Paul approaches this. And I want you to see it is that he's really being very soft. He makes the point that it's like, I feel like it's like a pleading tone, okay, that if you understand things, if you understand what Jesus and what God is about, and you've understood what I've said, please hear this, that Paul is making that kind of statement, by the mercies of God, which how great are the mercies of God? They are many. They are great. If I take simply the forgiveness of my own sin, it is great. But then there is so much more than that of my desires for life and happiness and all the things that we have that way that are involved with being with God, choosing this right way rather than the way I might choose on my own. And so he entreats them by the mercies of God to present your body as a living sacrifice. Now, do you think about your body as being put up on an altar and offered by death to God? Do you think like that? Because you see, I don't. I don't think, okay, my living sacrifice is I'm going to give up some things that I like. I'm going to that my sacrifice isn't, shall we say, to the bone. But I think that what he's saying is something. No, that my sacrifice is that back in the days of the Greeks, they didn't And it's a position of the humanist. The evolutionists, they degrade the body because they believe that the body was evil, that my evil dwells in the flesh. And in a very real sense, it does. But it really dwells in the mind. And you see, they would blame their body for what goes on in my errors and the things that would be along those lines. And so then the sacrifice, this that's impure, is not the sacrifice I should give. I should give something else. And that God reveals that the body as well as the soul belongs to Him, and that man can serve Him with their body as he can with his mind and with his spirit. All of you belongs to me. I made you. And so, under those terms, God asks us to consider some things. 1 Corinthians 6:19, or do you not know that your body is the temple and the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? And when we get to thinking that, oh, yes, I am, well, you have some control over your body and things, but truly, you don't belong to you. 1 Corinthians 3:17, if anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him. For the temple of God is holy, which temple you are. And in 1 Corinthians 6:20, for you were bought at a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. And so here it is that our sense of sacrifice then is that I don't belong to myself, I belong to God. He is my master. He is the one that needs to be pleased with who I am, and He has given me the thought, more than the thought, the direction of what I should be and how I should act and what I should do. So the greatest demonstration of the body of a human and its value would be Jesus dying on the cross, when He gave His body for the sake of men, and that we take that and count it at high cost, do we not? Yes. Okay, and so we have similar value in the things that we do, even though we are in the body. That then a living sacrifice is in contrast to the slain sacrifice. See, when it's an animal, and you're going to give up something that has worth to you, and it was supposed to be something of value, and you're going to give it to God and give it away and not receive the benefit from it, there is a sacrifice of the person doing the giving, and we recognize it. Okay, and so now, if I'm going to live then this way and make a living sacrifice, it is not based in the death of the person. And yet, it is, isn't it? That I sacrifice what I would do, be, act, all the things that I would choose, I give up in light of who I serve. And now when I do that, and if I'm going to make a living sacrifice, it is not a one-time sacrifice. It is an everyday sacrifice. That is what makes it daily, that I give myself again to the same cause that I gave to yesterday, and that I will do that over and over and over again. And in the declaration, it speaks louder than words, that I belong to my Lord and not to myself. And therefore, those that do that are generally rallied around as godly men, and because He's godly, men will come to them to be close to them, as David was, as all the heroes of the Old Testament were, because these men are favored by God. Well, why are they favored by God? By the belief and by the actions that they hold every day. So, as we come to that and recognize it, then Hebrews 9:11-12 says, but Christ came as high priest of the good things to come, with a greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is, not of this creation, and not with the blood of goats and calves, but with His own blood He entered the most holy place once for all, having obtained eternal redemption. Okay, and so here He has come with a mission, and His mission and His sacrifice was for a purpose and a creation of a place, the whole most holy place, that he could go and that redemption for all may be possible. In Hebrews 9:28, so Christ was offered once to bear the sins of many. To those who eagerly wait for him, he will appear a second time apart from sin for salvation. And so that the struggle that we have all during our lives is going to go on, this battle against sin, the battle for sacrifice to God that shows that we love him. And so the Lamb of sacrifice of the Old Testament is the emblem that we kind of see in our mind of giving self away. And to what level? All the way to death. So, in the 1 Thessalonians 5:6, it says, therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. That a holy sacrifice indicates then that sacredness of the action is being given for not just to be seen, but for the sake of who we believe in. And in 1 Peter 1:15, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. And so that holiness is not an action of sacrifice as far as an animal would be. It is a matter of conduct. You be holy as God is holy. There must be purity of life without pollution and brokenness of divided interests. I think that equals an animal without blemish. An acceptable offering is one that pleases God, okay? And so it has to be authorized by God. It has to be the thing that God wants. And so he's asking for us to give something, and we are to give that something, okay? God doesn't accept everything that we give because we put a religious spin on it. In Colossians 2, beginning in verse 20, it says, therefore, if you died with Christ from the basic principles of the world, why, as though living in the world, do you subject yourselves to regulations such as do not touch, do not taste, do not handle, which all concern things which perish with the using, according to the commandments and doctrines of men? These things indeed have an appearance of wisdom in self-imposed religion, false humility, neglect of the body, and are of no value against the indulgence of the flesh. And so what men did is that rather than give God what he's asked for, rather than give the sacrifice that he's looking for, that many times others don't even recognize it as what it is, but you do. That you and your relationship with God would be what it should be, and others may see things and recognize motives maybe. But my idea of this is, but then men began to make up things that I can give that you can see. And so that it will be a better way. If you can see it, if more people can see that I am holy. I question even myself. What I mean by that, I've brought this up on more than one occasion, but it's the kind of thing, and it's just such a little thing. So many preachers that I know get up and change their voice to preach. They change the cadences and how they speak. It's not that person that you know in the pew. It's a whole different person that comes up and speaks with a raised voice, a softer voice, a type of speech. What I tend to consider the ecumenical God. I'm going to speak to God. What does the mean? And or that we do other things that we it's to show holiness. And I realize that that comes from within us in many ways, that we say things trying to be holy, when holiness is an attitude of obedience. And it is recognized. It doesn't need to be helped. There are those that, as you look at these things, where the people have gone way too far, okay, and imposed things on themselves that God never asked them to do, and given themselves this hardships for the purpose of pleasing God, and we struggle with that. I want to do more than what God said, and I appreciate the attitude, but why don't you just do what He said? There are those that would, that have a condescending attitude of false humility, and those that would neglect the body, and those things that have nothing to do with what God intended. Because we must always come to the understanding that it matters little what men think of us if God approves us. So that this sacrifice, this thinking that we have and giving of ourselves and the dailiness of it and the repetitiveness and the maintaining in our mind and in our hearts that we are doing this for a purpose, all of that, when it comes together, is our reasonable service. That's what anyone would do that appreciates one greater than they are. We see it all the time with men, and that we honor titles that people have, and that if you hold a title, we will give you respect, and sometimes great respect. And there is a, on the other side of that coin is that if you are respected by your title, then you need to uphold the responsibility of that title. And we are so disappointed because our political leaders are not doing that anymore. Many leaders are not doing that anymore. But not the Christian. Our services then is keeping with the conclusions of the highest intelligence, which acknowledges that it is harmonious with all that blesses man. We please God. And we do not mean, it's not just that what we do is equitable as the purchase of land at a reasonable price. It pertains to the heart. And that is, our obedience comes from the heart. That same willingness that Jesus had this morning as we were discussing the lesson of I will heal a leper if you're willing, and I am willing. Romans 6:17 says, therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living and holy sacrifice. That's not Romans 6:17. That's Romans 12. All right. What I want to say is that what our scripture reading actually is saying is that there is no formalism in your personal religion. It is not a formal aspect. Our sacrifice offers many things, but it also offers our feeling and our affection. And so then there are those that would be dominated by feelings and affection and think that that's all there is. We offer the sacrifice of our eyes and our ears and of our hands and of the tongue, the emotions, all that we are, we give. And as we age and we have those things, we think it's richer. I hope that it is. Let me ask a quick question. When you were a young Christian, and I mean early on, first year Christian, did you think you were saved? God had promised that you would be. If you will do this, if you will bow your knee to me and you will name my son as the Son of God, and if you will follow me. And how many errors did you have going on in your first year as a Christian? Mine was a wow-wee kind of year, okay? Was I saved? I believe I was, because my heart was in it. I wanted to be better, and I was full of habits that needed to be changed. And now that I've put many of those habits away, and I'm this old man that I am I still saved? think I am. Because my heart's still in it. That my sacrifice is real. It is not contrived or for show. It is that I want to be the man that serves the living God. And so that when we consider and offer our sacrifice, then, you see, we have replaced the lust of the eye and the lust of the flesh and the pride of life as a mannerism. And though I fail in so many ways, I have rejected that as being my God. So when we come to the point of Romans 12:2, and do not be conformed to this world, you see, that sense of transformation, of not letting this rule me anymore, but that I will turn to God, that I'm going to prove that God is. So the division between flesh and spirit is epitomized by what he is saying here. And obviously, not only can we become conformed to the world, but we can live so as to be conformed to the world. Now, this very simply is the idea that if it walks like a duck and if it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And if I don't separate myself from the world enough to be recognized that I'm not of this world, then I am of this world. And that's an ouch, and I know it. So, instead we are transformed, and that we are transformed by the renewing of our minds, that the things that God has said to me have made transformation, and that as we come in that sense, that this is the light that Jesus talked about that alludes to teaching that is not conformed to this world, that says, I will give you more than you ask for. If you compel me to go a mile, we'll go two. If you ask for my coat, you get my clothes, you get more clothes than you asked for. If you sue me, I'll just give it to you. You don't have to take. And yet, the world is eaten up with those ideas. So this being transformed by the renewing of our minds, remember that we're talking about brethren who change their minds about being of the world and come to the newness of life through baptism. And that we're talking about brethren who notice as well that those that believe in Jesus Christ, even to that point, still need to transform that mind. Did you ever have the moment where you said, I'm not sure I can do this, that I can do all that God would have me do? I did. I'm not sure I'm good. It's not about being good enough. I don't know if I can do it all. And so there was a sense in which I am going to always be disappointing. And I tell you that no, it is more of the idea that I will keep on until I can take more, do more, be more. That I will work on it until I can. It is not the sense of I can't, but I can. And that those changes, you see, would cause us to be different from the world, because even though I failed, I get up. Well, even though I'm not all that I should be, I will be as much of it as I can. And I will keep on being that until I have more and more and more. And that the Christian can never then completely transform himself without continual Bible study and the contemplation of it. I must. And so, James 2:14, what does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to him, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed of the body, what does it profit? Thus, also, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. That it is not simply the understanding that I know what a spiritual idea is, but that I understand what an idea in play is. when a person, me, takes what God would have me do and then does the thing that he should do. It is that that makes things happen. So that when someone says, you have faith and I have works, okay, show me your faith without your works and I'll show you my faith by my works. It is like Matthew 7:20, by their fruits you shall know them. Now what is within me is within me. And that is monitored by me. But my fruits should point to the idea that I am what the Lord would have me be. There's some things here that I could ramble on with, and I don't want to do that. Do you believe, though, that blaming someone else or making threats or issuing dictates or any other form of trying to gain my way is really the methodology of Jesus Christ? Well, brethren, I'm asking that question in a very real sense from within the church. When decisions are made that may not be the thing that you would like to have happen here, you think that I should do this or I should do that or that we should do that. That's really the point. And we're not going to go your way. Do you stay on the team? Or do you have a different idea of subversion? You see, there's some real points here of who will you be even when you don't get your... So I want us to see that the decision that we make initially about whether God lives, whether he is in control, and what I believe will result in an action of who I'm going to be accordingly. And so that if I do believe in God and all that will be that way, you see, the Bible tells us that we receive our faith by what we hear, and that it says that we believe what we will, and then we're going to act upon it. Okay, so that as I come to my belief, there will be an action that I take. Now, what will those actions be? And that they are a monitor of whether you are believing or whether you are not believing. And so, God lives and has asked us to offer ourselves as a living sacrifice, transforming ourselves out of this world that we know it needs to change, meaning the world. And the only way it will change is by you deciding, I will make that change. So when New Testament Christians were told about repenting and confessing Jesus as the Son of God and being baptized for the remission of our sins, that is being offered to all those that are here today who have not done it. But the real transformation is not in the fact that I agree to be what God says, but that I will do and continue what he believes in. That's what we're supposed to be. And that is what these two verses are about. And then as you read on into the chapter, it begins to show that men show what they believe in different actions, but they are actually the same. Some are given with talent that can do this and are better than someone else that does that, but it all blends together. And when they are used and when we use what we know that God has told us to do, that we become a mighty force in a world that needs us so badly. And so I would ask that we be those people. It's directed toward those who have already done it. This lesson is about that. And the question that I've maintained and what I determined to do when I became a Christian, have I done what I determined to do? In the movie Saving Private Ryan, the very end of the movie has this phrase. Ryan, who's had a number of men die because they came to tell him to leave the battlefield. He'd lost his brothers, and we don't want a family wiped out. He says, I can't leave my friends here. I can't leave them to die. And so the team that goes to get him stay to help the fight. and those that are in those that had no battle to fight in, as far as it goes, they take up the fight and they are lost. And Ryan lives. And the last thing said to him is, make my death worth it. He is then in the last scene at the cemetery where all the crosses are of the veterans that have died and that are in Europe. And he goes and he finds the men that died that day in that battle that he would not leave for. And he falls down in front of that cross. When he stands up, he looks at his wife and he says, "Tell me I'm a good man." That's exactly what happened. Only the one that died for us is better than we ever could have hoped. Am I a good man? I hope we are. And if we're not, that we would work on it every single day. As I say, all things are ready for those that would like to make the decision to be what God would have them be. And for us that we have made so many mistakes and whatever may have been along those lines, if we can help you, won't you come as you stand and sing?